Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, text 9, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON. Suhrin Mitrayudasina, Madhyasta Dveshya Bandhushu, Sadhushvapi Chapapeshu, Samabuddhir Visheshyate. Yogi Yunjita Satatam, Atmanam Rahasi Sthitaha, Ekaki Yata Chittatma, Nirashira Parigraha. This chapter describes the Dhyana Yoga system, in which the yogi leaves material society and goes to live in a purified place, generally alone. It means he may be in a cave or a forest under the guidance of his guru. But after being trained in meditation, they would spend long hours simply in meditation. As Srila Prabhupada pointed out, and indeed as the scriptures say, this system of meditation is not at all suitable for the modern age. However, many of the points which are being made here by Krishna are also applicable to the Krishna conscious process. And as the ultimate purpose of Lord Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita are to teach Bhakti Yoga, Srila Prabhupada has explained these verses mostly in relationship to the Bhakti Yoga process. This series of verses is describing the self-realized person, the qualities of a self-realized person that pertain to those who are self-realized, either Brahman-realized, Paramatma-realized, or Bhagavan-realized. It's been said that a Brahman-realized person is self-controlled, fully satisfied. He sees everything, whether pebble, stone, or gold, as the same. So this is the Brahman-realized person. He realizes everything in this world is temporary. I have no intrinsic relationship with it. Aham Brahmasmi, I am spirit by nature. So gold cannot benefit me any more than stones, because I'm not this body. And all kinds of people he deals with an equal mind. Those who are friendly to him, against him, or in the middle. Those who are pious or impious, he deals with them equally. He is fully absorbed in the consciousness of Brahman. He carefully controls his mind, being free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. Now, how this is understood in Krishna consciousness is explained by Srila Prabhupada in this purport. A devotee doesn't treat pebbles and gold as the same. He wants gold. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, na dhanam, I don't want money. But in our movement, we do want money. We do want money. But not on our own account. For his own personal sense gratification, a devotee doesn't want anything. But he wants to engage everything in the world in Krishna's service. Generally, it is considered that there are two great dangers on the path of self-realization. These are called Kanak and Kamini. It means gold, and Kamini means woman, especially the type of woman who is interested in increasing one's lusty desire. Women, they are glorified in Vedic culture if they are pious and chaste. But the transcendentalist is warned to be very careful of women who are interested in increasing the plastic desire. However, we are not a movement of yogis sitting in caves. Our movement is interested in opening centers in the big cities of the world, because we have to preach Krishna consciousness. And for that, money is required. And if we're going to preach in the modern world where women don't simply remain in their homes, as in traditional Vedic society, then so many spirit souls in the form of women's bodies are also going to come and take interest in Krishna consciousness. So we don't reject kanak, gold or money, or kamini. Mm-hmm. But rather, the devotee wants to engage all the money in the world, and all the men and women, and all living beings in the world, in Krishna's service. However, the advice given here is pertinent.
Savitri,
pertinent? It's to the point. Yatachitatma nirashir aparigraha. This means, yatachitatma means always careful in mind. Nirashihi, without being attracted by anything else. Aparigraha, free from the feeling of possessiveness. The devotee should always be careful in his mind, because his nature is to be attracted by sense objects. Even though a devotee is supposed to engage everything in the service of Krishna, still he should be careful in his mind. Because due to bad habit since time immemorial, our tendency is to take the things of this world and use them for our own sense gratification. So particularly these things that are mentioned. Without being attracted and free from the feeling of possessiveness. So this can refer, this very appropriately refer to Kanak and Kamini. We should be free while engaging monies in Krishna's service. We have to be free from the feeling of possessiveness and understand that all money is meant for Krishna. And without being attracted by anything else, means that in our Krishna conscious movement, there are so many young men and young women joining. And the tendency is that young men and young women feel attracted. But we should remember that everyone has come to serve Krishna. As Prabhupada said, that we shouldn't, he was instructing brahmacharis, that you shouldn't think of these young women who have come to join as being for our enjoyment, but as gopis who have come to serve Krishna. Now we see that the yogi goes to the forest or the caves so as to be removed from the sense object, because the whole purpose of yoga is yoga indriya samyamya, to control the senses. And it's very difficult to control the senses if they're constantly interacting with the sense object. Therefore, the yogi goes away from the interaction, in the gross interaction of senses with the sense objects, just so that the attraction can cool down. He has to control his mind, but if the mind is always being agitated for sense enjoyment, it's very difficult to control the mind. However, this process is not practical in the modern age. In so many ways it's not practical. Neither can we live in a forest. Even if we try, most likely the government wouldn't even allow us. If we tried to live in some cave in the forest, probably someone would come and take us to the city and put us in a mental institution. And if we try and sit and meditate, our mind will be so agitated. Anyway, we can't even sit properly. We can't even sit on the floor for more than 10 minutes. And then as far as if we're just asked to eat the roots and the dry leaves in the forest, well, what do you think, Nakshatri? I don't think. Never mind Nakshatri, I couldn't do it. Forget it. No way. So we wouldn't make very good yogis. Not this kind of yogi. So here we are living in the city where there's so much agitation for sense enjoyment, and living in an ashram with brahmacharis and brahmacharinis. There's no such word in Sanskrit as brahmacharini. This is a new invention. Ashram means either grihastha ashram, or ashram generally means where people go to get away from all of this. So no one in India thinks of an ashram as a place where there are many unmarried young men and women living together. Still today, they don't even allow that. Still today, they don't allow that even in the university hostels, in India at least. They're very strict. Women's hostels, no men can go. Boys' hostels, no women can go. They have to be back by 9 o'clock at night. So very strict. And as far as the yogis' leaves and roots, well, we're also taking leaves and roots, but combined grains, ghee, and so many things combined into nice foodstuffs offered to Krishna. However, in these very different circumstances, the same point has to be got to, namely controlling the mind and senses. The dhyana yogi simply tries to control his mind and senses and fix it on some vague, impersonal understanding of the self. However, the bhakti yogi is concerned to fix his mind on Krishna. And this is how it is possible to live in such unusual circumstances while executing yoga and still be successful. The bhakti yogi is able to live in the big materialistic cities of the world and meet many materialistic people and deal with money and women and eat sumptuous foodstuffs. He's able to do this because he does everything in Krishna's service. He takes strength from Krishna. This process is very powerful. The Dhyana Yogi tries to control his mind and senses by his own endeavor. The devotee also endeavors himself, but by taking strength from Krishna, he is able to live self-controlled, even in the midst of so many disturbances. He cannot execute that very harsh system of austerity, but he can serve Krishna, and in doing so, he is benedicted by the grace of Krishna. And thus he is able to control his senses in the best way. He gets such pleasure from the service of Krishna, he has such feeling for Krishna, that he doesn't want to misuse the facilities that Krishna is giving him. So much money may come to a devotee, but he doesn't think how I will use it for my own sense enjoyment. He simply thinks how this should be used in the service of Krishna. He may have honor and respect accorded to him. He may be offered worship and a big seat, a big title. But he simply accepts these things for the sake of preaching Krishna consciousness. So many beautiful women may approach him, but he's only interested in interacting with them for the sake of giving them spiritual guidance. However, devotees should realize their own limitations and be careful also, that as long as we are not completely freed from material contamination, as long as even the slight seed of material desire is in our hearts, then we should be very careful in our dealings with Kanak, Kamini, and all the affairs of this material world. Therefore, to keep safe in this material world while serving Krishna, we should always keep association with devotees. Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha. In Gita, Krishna says that one's desires manifest according to one's association. So if we always associate with pure-hearted devotees, then our desires may also remain pure. We also have to keep the intelligence strong by regularly hearing about Krishna, regularly hearing about the purpose of life, regularly hearing about our true existential position. That we are not these bodies, that we are not meant for enjoying these bodies, that there is no enjoyment anyway. We're simply meant to serve Krishna. And by engaging in the service of Krishna, regularly chanting Hare Krishna, sure, we also gain a taste for Krishna consciousness, sure, by which we won't want to spoil our lives by indulging in petty sense gratification. Therefore, this process of sadhana bhakti is so important. We have chanting and dancing, hearing about Krishna. This helps to keep our intelligence clear and gives us a taste for Krishna consciousness, so that we can live in this world engaging everything in Krishna's service. As Prabhupada writes here, the first business of a transcendentalist is to keep the mind always on Krishna. So that is the purpose of our Krishna conscious movement. If the mind is always kept on Krishna, then the mind and senses are automatically controlled. But we also have to control the mind and senses so that we can keep our mind always on Krishna. So it works both ways. We have to make our own effort to control the mind and senses. We also have to beg for the grace of Krishna to help us and always endeavor to keep our mind fixed on Krishna. So it's not easy because we are habituated in another way. We are habituated to try to engage the senses in the so-called enjoyment of the sense objects. But this bhakti yoga process is very powerful. And if we stick to that, then surely we will be successful in the course of time. We shouldn't become discouraged. It is difficult, no doubt, to overcome the pushing of the senses. Although it is intrinsically natural for us to always think of Krishna, because we are habituated in another way, it is difficult for us to always think of Krishna. But we shouldn't become discouraged. Maya is always trying to take away our enthusiasm. Maya is always offering so many alternatives to Krishna consciousness. But we should keep our faith in Krishna. But if we simply go on with this process, then surely Krishna will help me. And in due course of time, I'll be freed from the pushings of the mind and senses. And Krishna, if I go on with this process, surely in due course of time, Krishna will show his full mercy to me. And we'll be able to, as Prabhupada many times said, and ultimately we'll be able to see Krishna face to face and engage in his direct service. Hare Krishna. Any questions, please? There's no reason to feel lonely. It's only if we put mental fences between ourselves and other devotees. Devotees have to live together, exchange with each other. That means Yuhyamakyati Pritchati, that devotees inquire from other devotees and reveal their minds in confidence. We have to find some devotees we can trust. We can't simply live with the consciousness of a yogi in a cave if we're living in a brahmachari ashram. So it's always recommended that we serve the devotees. And by serving the devotees, then that is the basis of Vaishnava relationships. If they're feeling this too much, there's some feeling of loneliness in the brahmachari ashram, then maybe we're not in the right ashram. It requires a little toughness also to be able to withstand such unfavorable mental transformations. Brahmacharya means brahmacharati iti brahmacharya, to be fixed in spiritual consciousness. So for one who's fixed in spiritual consciousness, there's no such thing as loneliness or depression or any such thing. So everyone has to see, it's not that the brahmacharya ashram is the most suitable for everybody. So everyone has to see if they're properly situated or not. Actually, to remain in the brahmacharya ashram requires a high standard of commitment, and high standard of commitment, dedication and conviction. Mm. Any other question? Yeah, a topmost devotee sees that all living beings, whether they're friendly to me or not, are all equal, because they're all great devotees of Krishna. Only I am not a devotee of Krishna. Distinguishes in Bhagavad Gita. There is a difference, it's not all one. Suhrin mitra yudasina madhyasta dvesha bandhushu. These are, what is that? That is, suhrin means good well-wisher. Mitra means well-wisher, but not so much. Udasin means they don't care. Either way, Madhyastha means someone who's trying to go between Dvesha, those who are envious, and Bandhushu, those who are friendly. These are all different positions. Friend and an enemy is different, but one situated on the topmost platform of Krishna consciousness, he sees them in that ultimately everyone is a servant of Krishna. But for a preacher, he must distinguish those. Preach Krishna consciousness. So who will help our movement? Who will be against our movement? You have to distinguish. All right, then you don't have. That is under yoga maya potency. That is understood by the pure devotees themselves. It is their extreme humility. In our position of non-humility, we cannot understand the humility of these great devotees. We think that happiness means Ishvara ham aham bhogi siddho ham balavan sugi. I am the controller. I am the controller. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. So in a materialistic concept of life, you think you will be happy by dominating over others. And pure devotional service means an opposite concept of life, in which a devotee becomes so much humble that he thinks himself less than the worms in stew. Such a devotee experiences the transcendental bliss of love of Krishna. That is not understandable or even explainable to those in an opposite concept of life. That can be experienced by realization only. Do everyone here, do you want to say the question again? Whenever I'm asked what I think about something, I always say that it doesn't matter what I think. My opinion isn't important. But we have to see what is the opinion of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. A pure devotee, this term may be understood in different ways according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. It's generally understood to mean a devotee who is free from all material contamination and is fully fixed in Krishna consciousness. But it can also mean a person who has such an aspiration and is acting in such a way that he may ultimately become fully pure. That's why Prabhupada wrote in one letter that all my disciples are pure devotees. So you may ask, well, how is that possible? Because so many of them fell away from Krishna consciousness. The answer is that as long as one is sincerely cultivating that desire and following the practice of bhakti yoga, then he may also be considered a pure devotee. Because if he sticks to the practice, then he will certainly become a pure devotee. And even if he's sincerely practicing like that, but circumstantially he falls away from the path, he will in due course of time come back and achieve full perfection. When discussing the pure devotee who sees himself as more fallen than the worms in stool, then we're referring to great Mahabhagavat pure devotees, such as Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, who wrote that, Jagai madhai hoite muito papishto Purusher kita hoite muito lagishto. He said that I am more sinful than Jagai and Madha, and I am less than even the worms in stool. Jemora naam shune tarapunna koi. Jemora naam loi tarapapa hoi. He said that whoever hears my name, they lose their pious activities. And whoever says my name, they become sinful. So Prabhupada explained that he wasn't just saying that as some kind of poetry. He actually feels that is the highest ecstasy in Krishna consciousness. To feel that I'm so far away from Krishna. How can I ever get the mercy of Krishna? So Krishna pours his mercy on such a devotee. It's someone who's very proud and thinks, oh, I'm such a great devotee. He is bereft of the mercy of Krishna, although he may falsely think he has got it. Any more questions? Well, this revealing the mind doesn't necessarily refer to one's activities, but it may refer to one's inner spiritual development also. So one may not feel that he can reveal that confidentially to everybody. Generally, you'd want to reveal such a thing to someone you're very close to. You see, even among devotees, there may be some who we feel more close to. It's not that we're just a homogeneous social mass. Even within Krishna consciousness, there are some, although we're friends with all devotees, but naturally there are some we're more close to and who we trust very deeply. That you'll find at all levels of Krishna consciousness. Even among those devotees who are more advanced, they, according to their personalities, they have closer friends. Some are closer friends and others not so close. You may not also want to reveal your mind in confidence. There may be so many newly coming devotees who are not very mature. It might not be very wise to reveal everything. When we say reveal everything, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, just like all the problems and bad things in your mind. There may be so many wonderful realizations also. Then again, not everyone may be able to understand that or appreciate that. It's also very sweet to cultivate some close friendship with a few people. Again, not that we're against others, but it's nice to have very close friends in Krishna consciousness. Krishna is very close to everybody. But as jivas, we are not able to be very close to many, many people. We don't have that ability. There are unlimited living beings, and Krishna has a very close relationship with all of them. But our nature as jivas is that we can't develop very close relationships with very many people. Certainly not as Krishna does, with millions, billions, trillions, and zillions. As we advance in Krishna consciousness, we are able to relate better with more and more people and appreciate the qualities of different devotees more and more. But still we may have our particularly close friends. All right? No? I think you better do it. It's going to be a lot to translate. Okay, say it loudly.
And
okay, this sounds more like something out of some kind of psychology book than out of anything I've seen in Shastra or heard from devotees. Don't mind me saying so. Now, it's not necessarily true that someone who's been practicing Krishna consciousness for 10 years or 20 years is more advanced. But generally it's understood that there's some kind of advancement in that. Because simply to keep on going for a longer period of time means that you're committed yourself. Maya is always offering different allurements, and to consistently say no to Maya at least enough so that you go on practicing Krishna consciousness means that some measure of sincerity and progress must be there. I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for 23 years. I've never met anyone who told me now I'm 85%, I'm going to 86. So I don't have such an experience. But generally we find that devotees, we cultivate, there's a culture of self-demeaning rather than self-promotion. If a devotee is trying to present himself as more advanced than he is, then usually very soon he's exposed. Krishna doesn't like that. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. If you think everyone's insincere, that may be a great problem. I'm sure there must be some sincere devotees. I mean, it does require some sincerity to follow this process, all the regulated principles, to daily chant the holy names of Krishna at least 16 rounds. And even if someone may have so many disqualifications, just to do that, it requires definitely some sincerity. At the same time, we can't expect that everyone is doing that immediately becomes extremely advanced. So, but we should do that. I see myself, and I see other devotees, that they do find out other devotees who they can sincerely relate with. And as far as just like revealing your mind to everyone, well, why should we think that everyone should be so interested? Do we all have to sit around all day while everyone, one after another, we tell everyone that, you know, I'm still attracted by the sense objects, and I'm so much in Maya. Our process is more positive, that we spend time together glorifying Krishna. Introspection and discussion of how we can improve is certainly part of our process. But the main thrust is on glorifying Krishna, which is our constitutional position to do that. And by doing that, we become purified. I mean, this could form the basis of a very big discussion, but those are just some thoughts on it. Introspection is an important part of Krishna consciousness, which we should not neglect. Personal introspection and also discussing with other devotees. Sorry? No. Our eternal constitution. Say it in the mic. In Serbian. No, our true constitutional position is to be the servant of Krishna, not to be a Brahma. Our goal is to go back to Godhead, not to Brahma Loka. So like this, devotees were asking me just when I was coming if I was going to do any seminars or on any particular subject. No, I think I'll just speak on, while I'm here, I'll give classes like this. And we can leave time for questions. So if you have various questions, maybe you'd like to prepare them and we can answer them. And try to answer according to my ability at the end of the classes. Hare Krishna. As I think many of you know, I've written several books. They're mostly meant for distribution among devotees. So as I travel, I try to distribute them. So you're all devotees, so you're all eligible to purchase them. They're in English. Seems that quite a few of you know English. So if anyone is interested to take some of my books, you're welcome. Hare Krishna. If you like to, I have some varieties here. If you'd like to see, you can come after the class. Thank you so much for listening nicely and for dancing in kirtan very nicely, worshipping Gaur-Nitai so nicely. As long as the kirtan goes on, everything will be all right. Nothing can be too much wrong. In the material world, there are always disturbances. All these things come and go, but kirtan is eternal. So, under